dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers, to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho, cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll fool you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISO? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hood, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISO, RAM, zip, zip. Dedicated to the hackers.
Hello! Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 179. And today's date here is December 26, 2000. Okay, we're not going to say that. This is a kind of a, this is 179, and the supposed air date was the 26th, but due to a bit of miscommunications, and I thought Stank Dog was going to do it, and Stank Dog thought I was going to do it, we didn't actually end up doing a show for this week. So this is our makeup show. It's 179. We're going to get this up hopefully before the new year, I really hope, unless I get too drunk tomorrow night. And we'll try to get all that figured out. And with us this week is Paladin.
How you guys doing?
Yeah, pretty good. Oh, was there someone else here besides me? I looked under my seat. I don't see anybody.
Yeah, how are you doing, Black Guy?
I'm doing pretty well with the fact that we're just kind of sheepishly explaining why we didn't have a show this week, so...
Yeah, it's okay. You guys usually don't...
I'm actually curious how many people didn't notice that we didn't have a show this week. As, you know, combined with the issues with the we have had issues updating the podcast, and I don't think the past two shows have actually gone out live due to the server issues. And that kind of messes up everything down the line. But I'm curious as to, and plus with all the holidays, I'm curious if anyone's actually downloaded the show this week. I bet everyone's, like, expecting this, like, they're listening to the show and it's like, oh, it didn't air? Oh, geez.
Yep.
But I don't know. I guess we can make, like, predictions for the future to prove, like, this is actually in the future. Saddam's dead.
Yay!
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's all kinds of people going out there, oh, you know, he was a good guy. He didn't mean to kill all those hundreds of people. It was a frame job. I don't know. Yeah, this is politics. We're getting away from that. So, how are you doing?
Fantastic. I had a wonderful holiday. Yourself?
Yeah. No, I did pretty good for my holiday. Yeah, because it's after Christmas. Actually, it would be after Christmas no matter what, even if we aired this live. But yeah, I got some nice books. Got some computer-related gizmos. I got an electronic weather station, so now I can find out what the temperature is and what the forecast is from the comfort of my own home.
Awesome. Yeah, my parents have one of those. They're really, really interesting.
It's cool. I like it. It is currently 35.4 degrees outside.
Wow.
With a barometric pressure of 30.30 inches.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, you always were, like, cool like me.
Now, does it do the satellite update thing with the time and all that good stuff?
It does. Well, it's not satellite. It does it through WWV in Colorado.
Ah,
I think that's where it is.
Awesome. Probably syncs with
and
the
actually,
clock
this,
and everything.
Well, yeah, this one actually does it, but I actually find I'm using that my Radio Shack clock that's supposed to do it only updates, like, once in a blue moon through the same source, even though they're, like, 2 feet away. Not even 2 feet away. They're, like 6 inches from each other, and the weather station picks up the signal. Actually, I'm curious if the weather station picks it up or the remote transmitter picks it up. That's a good question. That could be the difference. Who knows? Who knows? Yes, enough about my weather station. I don't know. I think we already covered the fact that this is a a pre-recorded late show, so we'll forgive you, and hopefully 180 will be out on time. We're going to hopefully record that Monday. What we're going to talk about, don't know yet, but we're going to talk about something, and gosh darn it, it's going to be cool.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
So, yes. All right, shall we go into email?
Absolutely.
Our first email tonight is from Sissy. Sisyphean.
It's all you, man. I wouldn't even try to pronounce that one.
Yeah, see, this is the problem. People, just make it easy on me. Include a pronunciation key with your emails. I think that's actually Sisyphus. Isn't that like someone from like Greek mythology?
I believe it may be.
I don't know. I never took Latin or Greek mythology or any of those people. So anyway, Sisyphean writes, please, 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 no more episodes on wilderness, Boy Scouts, etc. My ears are bleeding. It's so boring. I like to listen to Binrev, but for the tech hacking related stuff, not the woods. The closest I ever get to the wilderness is Central Park in New York City. From Sisyphean. Well, you know, it's like everyone complains about having to listen to safety lecture before the plane takes off. But like, as soon as the engines start catching fire, they start scrambling, you know, making sure their seatbelts buckled and reading the little safety evacuation manual. Hacking isn't restricted to Seth. It's handy to know. It was some good stuff. You were actually part of the naysayers, weren't you, Spaladin?
Yes. Yes, I was.
Yes. But, of course, you actually knew all of this.
Yes, the majority of it. I was in Boy Scouts when I was younger, so, yes, it was all not new to me.
Yes, I bet actually Sisyphean, like, right now, it's like his ears are bleeding again because there's two Boy Scouts on the show. And he's like, no! I don't want to listen to it! The Scoutmaster touched me! But anyway, yes, there's going to be... people just, you know, they complain about it. But hacking isn't, like I said, hacking isn't restricted to tech. It's just, it's there. Hacking is wilderness hacking. Hacking is hacking your car. I think, like, Stank Dog caught a lot of fire back in Hack TV 1 when he was talking about modding his car. But that's car hacking. Hacking isn't just computer stuff.
Absolutely.
Totally.
There's a lot of computer cars these days.
Yeah, well, that is true. I actually know someone who hacked a computer in their car. He made it all up, and I actually, the only problem that I have with it, I think it ran Windows, but that was because he wanted some type of turn-by-turn GPS software, so I really couldn't blame him for that.
Hey, Windows keeps us security professionals employed.
Indeed, it does. I remember when, like, NT4 had out and came out, and they had the Zero Administration Toolkit. And I remember like going, oh wow, this is interesting. Let me try, should I set this up? And I'm looking at it going, my God, this will keep us employed for years.
And so it began.
I don't know. And so it began indeed. Windows NT4, NT standard. Nice try. Who's our next email from? Our next email is from Blades Jester. And Sisyphean, you might want to skip ahead maybe about five. Maybe 10 minutes, depending on how long it takes me to read this. So just so you know. Black Ratchet, while listening to survival episodes, there are a few things that come to mind. The first thing that you do, as a general rule, is to take inventory, which we sort of covered. Though you do not want to improvise anything and everything. Survival training 101. What do we have and what do we need? Don't use up resources on things that you don't need or can make some other way if the resource is something you don't have much of, since it is something that may be of use, more use later. Secondly, on preparing a shelter, forests are a mixed blessing if you have built a shelter to stay in. They can provide cover and are usually a good source of food and resources. However, they are also dangerous during storm because falling limbs, some of which that can easily crush you. On the poncho lean-to, the poncho is not necessary. Creating a lean-to and then filling it the gaps with smaller branches and covering it with leaves, pine needles, and dirt, there's an extremely good insulator, is also very effective. We're trying to be frugal with our resources because we may need to use them for something else later. And there is a lot better use for cloth if you have options for materials you can make your shelter out of. After drinking water, boiling it will kill the microbes. Boiling receptacles can be made from anything ranging from large leaves to leather sacks to wooden poles, which aren't horribly hard to make. If you can't boil the water, try to find some water that animals are drinking. Extra points for finding suitable water that's being filtered through a sandstone because it's a very good natural filter. If you can't find animal tracks around the water and the water is clear and flowing, as in not stagnant, check to see whether or not there are many insect larvae in the water. Many types of larvae are a good indicator of whether or not the water is polluted since they do not tolerate pollution well. Food is a little trickier. Most things that deer, Andy said bears, eat are generally fairly safe to consume, though there are always exceptions. Acorns may be eaten. However, before you do, they really need to have the toxins removed by shelling them, placing them in a cloth bag of some sort, and put the sack in the running water for a few days. Around ponds or other still or slowly flowing bodies of water, dig up the cattail, the tubes on the roots that can be eaten like potatoes or ground as a substance like flour. I actually remember that from some book. Two of the things that you generally want to avoid eating if they are only food available are trout and rabbits. It is actually possible to starve to death on them. However, if other foods, such as tubers and acorns and other forms of meat, are available, then the trout and rabbits are fair game. No pun intended. I could go on for a while, but I don't like to ramble. This is what I get for, among other things, growing up around an ex-marine area which a lot of wilderness is available. Several hundred acres of which was owned by my family, so I actually have a place I could run off to if the mood struck me. Regards, Blades Jester.
Whew. Wow.
Actually, I don't think I stumbled through that pretty much.
That was pretty good reading.
Yeah. So since you're a Boy Scout, what do you think of that email?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was very informative.
Yeah, he can definitely hold his own in the wilderness. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I do remember the roots thing, and I think I remember that from Wilderness Survival or camping or something. I remember hearing that and that they were edible, although I never actually heard the flower thing. And as for the improvised anything and everything, I really don't expect us to go MacGyverish and, you know, say, oh, man, we have a bunch of matches. Let's go make a bomb out of it. And we were kind of hoping that common sense would prevail, but... That's a very good statement because, you know, there's people like Sisyphus or Sisyphean who just don't know and they don't get into the wilderness. So if they crash out there and they weren't paying attention during the two Wilderness Survival episodes, they might try to do that. No, we're not making fun of you, Sisyphean. Or Sisyphus. Oh, God. Why do they have to have such hard to pronounce names? Sisyphean.
Yeah, that is definitely an enigma.
Yeah. We're not making fun of you. We're just... You were actually, I think he was the only person that emailed in that said that the episode sucked. I did get some like fairly good reviews, but I also got some sort of negative reviews along the same lines of, I know it's not related to hacking, but, whatever. Our last email is from another hard pronounced name. I'm going to guess it's Aridium. You guys have a very informative show that keeps me listening throughout the whole segment. I look forward to your show every chance I get to listen to it. I've been in the military for almost 4 years, and this is my second tour over in Iraq. I know of at least 2 or 3 dozen more of my fellow soldiers who are very active listeners of your show. On behalf of them and myself, we would like to say thanks and keep up the good work. Regards, Aridium. Wow, I read this email today, and this isn't 26, so just saying that again. this made my head spin. This was, like, no kidding. Like, I was like, wow, there's actually, like, people in Iraq listening to our show? This kind of, like, really made, like, people like, wow. I want to send out to some preemptive shouts here. Shouts to Aridium, and shouts out to any of our service personnel out there who may be listening in, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, or anyone overseas, you know, keeping the country safe.
Absolutely.
Keeping your ass on the line, man.
Yeah, I'm behind you 110%. Thank you very much for my freedom. I appreciate all your hard work.
Totally. Completely and totally. And I'm sure this is, I met up like, you know, Emmanuel or another radio show person got an email like this. He'd be like, oh, baby killer or something, but we're not like that here. They're cool. They're getting their ass shot out there, so, or hopefully shot at, but not shot. But, you know, thanks a lot. Just really, thanks a lot.
Absolutely.
And I actually emailed him, and maybe we can get another response from him on the show. Or if anyone else listening from the show and who is want it, sends us email. It's radiobeamrev.com, and I would actually be, or you can email me directly if you don't want to talk, get listed on the show. It's blackratchet@blackratchet.org, and I'd be very interested in talking to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and hope you guys are having a happy new year and a good holiday, as good as you can have being in the asshole of the planet. Because I know it's really, really bad over there.
Hey, cradle of humanity, man. There's, I don't know. Yeah, totally. Stay safe. So, personal hacky stories. What have you been working on?
lately, trying to think of some things I can talk about without giving too much away.
Dropping the docs.
Yeah. I'm a little worried about dropping the docs. Nothing. Vacation.
Yeah. Or like, typically everyone's kind of. So, yeah, it's Christmas, so no one's really been working on anything. Actually, I'm not sure if I actually talked about this on the show. A couple of weeks ago, I decided to break out this old computer, and I installed Windows XP, and I now have a malware analysis station that I actually haven't used yet.
Nice.
Yeah, it was actually pretty cool. It was pretty funny because my sister-in-law decided to come over to my house, and she without me knowing, and they wanted to use my computer because it had a camera on it. Now, both my computers have a camera, both the analysis station and the my workstation. And I get a phone call from my wife saying, "Oh, you know, she came over and she used your computer to use your camera to talk to someone who's far away. She lives overseas." And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, wait a minute, how'd she get on my computer? It all has a password on it. And
nice.
I'm talking to her later, and she says, how'd you get on my computer? Oh, I just hit the key, and it fired right up. Oh, that's weird. And yeah, and this little dog kept barking at me. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then I realize, wait a minute, I have WinPooch, which is, I think it's like winpooch.free.fr, if I remember correctly. It's sort of like an active scanner to make sure you're like, oh, this program's trying to make registry changes or trying to do certain things to your computer. And she tried to install Windows Live Messenger, and I guess she finally made it so that it went on, but...
Wow.
Like, I had all this crap installed on my computer, so...
Wow.
Like, oh, all right.
Yeah, it's time to...
But it worked, so... Well, actually, the plus about this is now I have it with... I actually made a copy of... a disk copy of it with PartImage, which is an open-source ghost clone, Symantec Ghost or whatever they call it now.
Cool.
Whoever owns the damn program. I still call it Norton Ghost because that's just me, because that's what I grew up on. But I'm going to have to reformat it and we'll see what happens.
WinPooch.
All right.
What's that from? Is it WinPooch?
WinPooch. No, it's like Win. I think it's actually on SourceForge, so it might be winpooch.sf.net. But I think if you Google WinPooch, it's like the first link that pops up. Let's go double check that right now. Yes, WinPooch. Yeah, I was right. WinPooch.free.fr. And actually, I believe it's written in France, which explains to free.fr. But I think it's also on SourceForge and a few other places. But it's a fun program. If you want to monitor what the hell is going on in your computer in the background, install this, and it will tell you every little thing that goes on.
Well, it looks pretty decent. How long have you been using it?
I haven't actually really been actively using it for a while, but I've known about it for a few years, I think.
Oh wow!
And it was, yeah, it's a fun program to play with. It's if you, and for malware analysis, like it basically says, okay, you just executed this program. Okay, this program wants to try to make a change to the registry. Do you want to let us do this? Yes. Okay, well, it tried to go out to this website. You want to let do this? Okay. And it, like, basically prompts you through every step it's going. It's kind of creepy how much you can get down there.
Huh.
And actually, what's even more creepy about it is that because you can find out what's going on, that means other processes can do it at the same time and relay that back to their mothership.
Very true. Oh, you know what? I had a friend of mine give me a website. I had found a program that I thought was malicious. I was just surfing around, and I must have picked something up off of a web page. It's called the Norman Sandbox. I don't know if you've ever talked about this on the show before or not.
Norman or Truman?
Norman Sandbox. It's at http://sandbox.norman.no. And what this site allows you to do is to upload a file, and they will analyze it for you and tell you exactly what it does. And they have like
Oh, yes, I've heard of this. I don't think we mentioned this on the show before, though.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Yeah, I wasn't sure if I didn't remember if anybody had spoken about it or not. I have listened to every single episode of BenRev, but there's probably two or three that I may have missed.
Well, it's also, I mean, if we mention it like, you know, we mentioned it about 20 episodes ago. That's half a year,
yeah.
So a lot of people don't remember that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Like, I can't even remember if I talked about my malware analysis box, like, within the past couple of weeks, because I'm 26 and I have Alzheimer's, but anyway.
So is this malware analysis box, is this thing completely infested, or?
Actually, well, besides Windows Live Messenger, it doesn't have anything installed on it right now, but the idea is the fact that it's like a V, because a lot of like new malware, I think we kind of discussed this lately on the Malloween special, can actually detect whether or not it's running in a VMware session, and if it detects that, it doesn't execute.
Right.
So people can't reverse engineer it. So the idea behind it is you run it on a throwaway box, and then you just reformat it after every time it gets infected.
Wow.
And actually, what I was talking about was Truman, which is, I think we've talked about it before, and it's a bootable CD that automates a lot of the install process. And it was a pretty good, it's a pretty nice bootable CD for Linux-based distros. Automates a lot of the reinstall and analysis box. And if you run it, you can actually run it on two separate computers and have it so... one of the computers is the sacrificial lamb, and you only have it connected up to the computer running the Truman CD. And the Truman CD emulates basically the entire internet.
Wow.
So you can bring up, like, bankofamerica.com, and it'll sort of put up a faux Bank of America site.
Wow.
And that's what the analysis, and that's what the piece of malware is looking for. So it was pretty cool. I haven't had enough time to play with it, but it seems very interesting. It was... definitely, and I think it was like only made by one guy, which is doubly impressive.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. All right, do we want to segue into our main show topic?
Sure, sounds good to me.
All right. Well, our main show topic, what is our main show topic tonight? We'll let you take it, because...
corporate.
Another one of these people... Exactly, another one of these people who email us in saying, I want to talk about this, and I have some credentials to do it. And we're like, all right, type up some notes.
Corporate espionage.
So, yes, you too can be on BenRev Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to your forum. This really is a really friendly forum. I've pretty much been here since day one downloading episodes, and it's always been friendly. It's always been informative.
Well, sometimes we're not friendly, but only to noobs. We don't like noobs. No, we welcome the noobs.
Absolutely.
The noobs are our friends.
Everyone was a noob at one time. Everyone.
Exactly. That is my motto in life. Whenever someone starts talking, oh, the noobs are here. Dude, you were a noob too once. Welcome the noobs into our family.
That's right. Absolutely. Well, I'm going to...
All right, so what are you talking about? Let's actually start with... So, corporate espionage. For the two people that have been living in the cave for the past 10 or so years, what is corporate espionage? We're just going to gloss over that for
espionage, and this is directly from Wikipedia, it's the practice of obtaining information about an organization or society that is considered secret or confidential without the permission of the holder of the information. That's pretty much in a nutshell. But corporate espionage, it's primarily, you know, every company that is profitable and it does well in this world, in corporate America or even, you know, global corporate doings, it's because that they can do something better that the competition can't. Whether it's making hairspray or shoes or cars or hard drives or whatever, you name it, pharmaceuticals. So it's, you know, corporate espionage can pretty much be anything now, especially with databases. You know, being worth so much money because they're used for nefarious purposes like identity theft and, you know, the list is pretty much never-ending these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it can be anything from, you know, I mean, people say, when I've known that this is going to be important for corporations to address for a long time. And 6 or 7 years ago when I would tell people, hey, you know, you should have someone come in and do a sweep of your offices for bugs once a year. You should have an outside organization come in and audit your internal IT systems once a year. And they would sit there and laugh at me. Like, you know, who would want to come in here and break into our servers? You know, well, we only do A or we only do B or no one's interested in hairspray or no one's interested in, you know, I don't know, paper. You know, insert thing that you can get at Walmart here. You know, pretty much anything that you see on the shelf at Walmart can be a target for corporate espionage. Mm-hmm. Because not only product design and stuff, but pricing. You know, if you can undercut your competition these days by 2 or 3 cents, you're going to get the business because companies are very, very price conscious these days. So how much people pay for different things is very important.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So, all right. What since we're talking about, like, you know, people who come in and, you know, sweep or try to break into our systems or sweep for bugs or audit the IT logs. I mean, that's sort of like that's all InfoSec, right?
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And what's the type of corporate espionage you're seeing now is, well, for example, the HP debacle. For those of you that aren't familiar with the HP debacle, there was one of the board members on the board of directors was leaking information to the press. And the board of directors, the CEO, was it the CEO?
I believe it was the CEO.
Yeah, she said, you know what?
I think it was the CEO and the general counsel that
right.
decided to
this
go. Not everybody.
This is a bunch of BS, and we want to find out who's doing it. So they used a term called pretexting, where you gather information about phone calls and who you call and, you know, all that information that, you know, can be used. I mean, even dumpster diving. You cannot imagine how much information you can gain about a company by dumpster diving. And if you're another company that's in, you know, a fierce competition, automotive companies, they're extremely competitive. Products like plasma TVs, electronics, are extremely competitive. Mm-hmm. For example, have you ever noticed how Honda's little robot, what's it called, the Amiyo or whatever?
Yeah, I think it was like the Asimov.
Asimov.
And then there's another one.
Yeah, well, did you ever notice how those things are, you never see them by themselves. There's always 6 or 7 guys that are just standing around very, very close. Honda has a lot of very cutting edge technology in one of those robots, and the worst thing for it to happen one of those robots is to have somebody walk away with one. You can't put a price on innovation. You really can't.
Or even with the Asimov, you can have the robot walk off by itself, which is even doubly bad.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. GM learned this a few years ago. They were going to beat everyone to the punch, and they were going to start making cars in China under a GM nameplate and bringing them back to the U.S. to sell them. And they were the first company to do this. So they started sending over all the CAD data, and they went through about six or seven different Chinese suppliers. And these Chinese suppliers decided, hey, you know what? We've got enough of the information here. We can build our own assembly line. And that's exactly what they did. And they released a car, Chery Automotive released a car, that looked just like GM's about a year before. And you know why? Because they didn't have to do any of the design. All they had to do was manufacture from the CAD drawing. And it went in front of a judge, and the judge says, nope, these are two completely different vehicles. And, yeah, if you just search on Google for GM Chery debacle, you'll see what I'm talking about. They're identical.
So just out of curiosity, was the judge American or was the judge Chinese?
No, the judge was Chinese. Yeah. There's no intellectual property law in China. So anything that you release
in China,
you know, you have to be ready for it to be copied as soon as you release it. And that's primarily what people are looking for. They're looking for things that are in, like, research and development. Or, you know, mergers these days.
I mean, not to interrupt you, but going back to this, going back to, like, really, not we're trying to knock on Chinese here, but there was, I was reading, I was actually on the radio yesterday or the day before, on the business section, they were talking about this company in, who makes, like, diamond cutting tools.
Oh, okay.
And they're at their trade show. And they're like, oh, you know, we're pumping all this stuff out. We're cool. We're awesome. Buy our stuff. And they're walking along, and all of a sudden they see this Chinese booth, and they're like, this is the same exact thing.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you know,
yeah.
Buy our stuff. And actually, I shouldn't say that. This is bad.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's the same exact thing. But the amusing part was they saw this, called their legal department up, and legal department flew out, made sure it was the same thing, went to the whatever they were doing. I think it was like the court, the U.S. courts or federal courts, and, you know, presented their case and got an injunction for it, and they served them papers right on the trade show floor, which I thought was just like a great move.
Wow.
And they had to, like, shut their booth down for the rest of the show.
Wow. Yeah, you know, you're going to find out that there's really nothing you can do. It's really a losing battle. Once you release something into commerce, it's going to be copied so rapidly, it's ridiculous. And that's perfect example is you know how they have those magnetic those yellow ribbons that were on the back of the cars that said, I don't know,
things that are everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Well, the guy that makes those, he just started doing those in his garage. He was selling like something ridiculous, like 25,000 a week or something. Well, the market's been completely saturated by Chinese makers of those things that can make them for a penny a piece. And they look identical, and, you know, there's no way for him to combat that because it's just the market saturated, really. But,
there's just two sides to that coin. I mean, it's very sad that this guy's going out of business, but at the same point, the capitalist side of me goes, well, tough shit.
Yeah, absolutely. In the same respect, you have, like corporations like pharmaceutical companies. Pharmaceutical companies probably take corporate espionage a lot more seriously than most, just because of the reason of the formulation. They spend so much money to get a pill to a point where it actually works. Viagra, for example. I mean, can you imagine if, you know, it takes them 10 years to develop the formula for that pill, and somebody can just hack into a computer, burn all the information onto a CD, and walk out with it? And, you know, they've spent literally billions and billions of dollars to develop it. The same thing is happening in your company today. If you have contractors working for you, or, you know, I don't care what business you're in, hairspray, for example. Hairspray is a $200 billion a year business, and everybody is looking for, you know, the better, faster, cheaper way to make a bottle of hairspray. And there's nothing to keep an employee from, you know, hiring a guy. He comes in, he drops the whole hard drive of his computer and all your information onto a disk and walks out, and you never see him again. You know, corporations are starting to look at ways that they can track and limit how much information you can see and look up and everything else. Recent as two or three years ago, I was working for in a healthcare contract for about a year. And I had access to all the major health insurance companies' databases. And I could go in there and type in Smith, and it would pull up hundreds of thousands of records. And I said, you know, this isn't right. This isn't the way that this should be designed. It should be limited by several factors. And so I tried to contact them and, you know, tell the, I don't know, who database administrator or whoever, what was wrong with it and what kind of limitations they should put into place. And he said, yeah, you know what, I told my bosses the same thing, but we just don't have budget for it. So, you know, in corporate America, you have to be able to quantify spending money to protect these things. And let's face it, your business these days is IT, whether you want to face it or not.
Mm-hmm.
All your customer information is on computers, all of your everything you do, all your emails on computers. I mean, I can think of no business in the world that doesn't email, doesn't play at least a small part in it.
I'm trying to think of an example just to, like, be funny, but honestly, I really can't. I'm guessing, like, you know, the person shoveling shit in Louisiana, like, really doesn't need email, but, I mean, they could. Who knows?
You'd be surprised. That guy now is putting that in plastic bags, and he's selling it as fertilizer, gourmet fertilizer.
Yeah.
For
Joe Bob at shitshoveler.com.
Yeah, absolutely, yep. He's got his own website because it's, you know, 99 cents or $1.99 a month now for a website. So, yeah, he's got his own website and probably got a MySpace.
I really wonder if shitshoveler.com is good. I bet it is.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know what?
Buy our shit.
Yeah, God only knows what's on there.
Yeah, I almost went up and like started typing it into my web browser, and I was like, you know, that could just be a bad thing. I really don't want to look at that web page, especially while I'm recording right now, because that could be like a bad reaction. So you'll start hearing me going, oh dear Lord, oh my God, my eyes. So we might save that till after the show.
Yeah,
BinRev after.
Some other things that. Corporate espionage or people look for is like source code for software, you know, manufacturing and technical operations, target markets, prospect information, plant closures, you know, business methods, product designs, research, alliance and contract arrangements. Just watching where the executives of a competitor's board goes to, you know, are they spending a lot of time in South Africa? Why are they spending time in South Africa? Who are they meeting with? You know, what kind of alliances are they trying to create? You know, all those things in today's market, you know, they can make a lot of money. It's very important to know what your competition is doing.
Well, not even on the competition side. I mean, I could really see that as being, you know, if I know that the you know, crazy straight hairspray company is coming out with a new product and they're a publicly traded company, as like an end consumer, that could be very handy for me. You know, if I find out that they're announcing their new product about 2 weeks from now, I invest heavily in their stock, I could probably make a pretty penny. I could probably go to federal pounding in the ass prison, but
yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure that's not legal.
Yeah, one of the things you see these days is the old pump and dump scam due to...
Oh, God, that's getting really pissed me off lately.
Yeah, you know what you never hear about? You never hear about all these computers that people are trading, like Scottrade and E-Trade and Ameritrade and all those accounts. When those accounts get hacked, you know, you have the ability to buy stock with those accounts. And that's right there an easy way to pump and dump a stock. And you never hear about that. You know, the things that these companies try to keep quiet... It's amazing. I mean, I've been in, let's just say, situations where things have happened at a company and they don't want to bring in any outside help. They don't want you to call the FBI. They don't want you to call the Secret Service. They want to keep it internal because they're afraid that, of course, it'll get into the media, it'll be an embarrassment, the stock price will go down, you know, consumer confidence in the corporation will go down. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. They would rather just patch things up instead of fixing them properly. Or, you know, let's just say it's a lot easier these days to get funding for an audit.
Well, I mean, there's some point to it, but it's a very tricky situation. I'm from the technical aspect, it's a lot of, I mean, you outline a lot of the reasons. I mean, from the technical aspect, technical viewpoint of it, it's like very cut and dry. It's like, okay, we've been hacked. We need to contact the FBI, contact the upstream provider, tell these people they've been hacked because they've attacked us. And but when you start throwing in all these little, I don't know, corporate variables, it becomes an entirely different matter. So
it's
an interesting conundrum. And we see that a lot every day. I mean, how many times before this whole California law of, you know, you need to tell people that when their docs accidentally might get stolen or got hacked.
Oh, yeah, the California pre-check.
Everyone started coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, we got hacked. Oh, yeah, we got hacked last week. This week too. And, oh, apparently our backup tapes got stolen from a FedEx truck. And we never heard that before.
Right.
And the only reason it's coming out of the woodwork now is because it's they don't want to go to federal pounding or California pounding in the ass prison.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. All these laws came out, and there's a few other ones too, if I can mention those real quick. There's a law, HIPAA, which is the healthcare information.
Health insurance and privacy.
Yep.
Something act.
Can you believe that no one's ever been prosecuted under that law? And I can,
because no one knows what the law damn thing is. I mean, I've run into people who get paid high amounts of money having to deal with this law because I occasionally deal with the medical profession. And they're like, I don't know what it is. Jeez, I just try to make it secure.
Well, that
inspires me with confidence.
Yeah, it would. You know, to be honest with you, it'd be pretty easy if they just policed it a little bit, or if they asked for people to submit anonymous, like a tip line or something like that. The reason they didn't do it is because it's a paper tiger. Now, everyone these days, the buzzword is Sarbanes-Oxley, and the California Breach Act. Well, it's everyone's just kind of sitting back and waiting to see if they're going to be enforced. Because let me give you an example. Credit card fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Credit card fraud costs Visa and MasterCard, American Express, and you know all the banking industries billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. I mean, it's rampant. I mean, you can go to any website and buy 100 credit card numbers for $50. It's absolutely
ridiculous. I think at on Traxploits at Hope 2K, Hope number 6, or whatever they called it this year, Traxploits, so you can download it off their, it's a presentation, you can download it off their website. Secure Science Corporation, they basically kept track of all the credit card numbers they got, and they did some extrapolation of some, I think it was like, the FBI says the average credit card fraud cost a person, $200 or something.
Wow.
And they multiplied it all out, and it came out to be like, you know, some obscene number. And I think, I'm pretty sure it was in the billions.
Right.
And that was just the information they got.
Right.
Out of one company, out of how
right,
many?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. They haven't done anything to the credit card in my wallet to, like, add a pin to it or my picture or anything like that to make that go away. So what does that tell you? That tells me that they're making so much money that they don't even care that they have $200 billion worth of fraud.
Mm-hmm. And they're making it easier for fraud, I mean, with the whole RFID thing. Oh, yeah, just wave your wallet in front of this thing. No, thank you.
Exactly.
I'll just keep it in my pocket, thanks.
Yeah.
And you can keep your RFID off my wallet.
Well, I'll tell you who should be immediately fired this year is whoever came out at Best Buy, one of the executives opened his mouth and said that $46 million worth of gift cards don't get cashed every year and expire. So that's 100% pure profit. $46 million of those gift cards never even get used, and they expire within a year.
Oh, not in Massachusetts.
Oh, they're valid for longer?
Massachusetts, they... No, I don't think they can expire in Massachusetts, according to state law.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, there was a huge stink about it when they first started coming out that there was convenience fees and all this kind of other stuff. And I got to say, the legislature did jump into action and say, can't do that.
Well,
I think they can expire at some point, but it has to be at least like 5 years.
Oh, wow. It must be unique for that state because I think most states are within 1 year. Yes, 1 year.
Yeah, no, we are one of the few states that have a law like that.
Well, can you imagine that number? I mean, why would you tell anybody that number? That should be a closely guarded number, how many of those cards don't get used, because people are going to think twice about getting them for people. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
what you call a release of information that shouldn't be released. Better kept.
Or people that do have it are going to think, oh, crap, I'm not going to let them take my damn money. That's mine.
Yeah, $46 million. And, you know what? Let me see if I can Google that up real quick, because I want to give an absolute number.
Yeah, it was a sizable amount. Like, when I heard it, I was like, wow, God, who does that? That's just crazy talk. I mean, I couldn't even when I get gift certificates, they're usually spent within a week. Oh, great toys!
Yeah,
because that was always big plus. I mean, sometimes of
43 million. Gizmodo. 43 million from unused gift cards fiscal year 2006. Unbelievable! Pure profit. That's $43 million profit.
So if you got a gift certificate this year, go out and spend it and screw Best Buy. Dank will give you a kiss or something.
I guess Massachusetts, California, Washington, and Louisiana, the cards do not expire. So, yes, you are correct, Mr. Rex.
Okay, so they don't expire. I just thought it was a really – I think, like, after 5 years, they can start charging, like, a 10% fee per year or something maybe. I don't know.
Wow.
5 years just rattles around in my head or something. But who knows? I could be talking out of my ass. I do that a lot on the show.
So how can you fight corporate espionage? Let's talk about a few ways to fight it. One is background checks. I was sitting in a boardroom with some executives, and they were telling me how they deal with $1 billion in cash a day and stuff. And I said, well, you know, I would really like everyone to have a background check. And they all started laughing. They thought I was joking. And I said, no, actually, I'm not joking. Everyone in this room should have a background check. And even then, you know, they wouldn't do it because of whatever reason. I mean, half of them had probably, you know, had stuff, you know, disorderly conducts and stuff in college that they would never want brought up again. But who knows? They could have had a felony also. You know what I mean?
They'll find out that incident about that goat in that time in Louisiana.
Absolutely. Yeah, I went in.
The goat enjoyed it, really, Foster.
The more questions I asked, the more they really couldn't give me answers. Like, for example, they used a machine to wire money all over the world. And I said, how many people have the information to this computer? And the one guy says, oh, no, just me and this other guy, just me and this other guy. And the girl walks up and says, oh, no, Jill and Kelly both have it also. Remember that time you went golfing and we had to do that wire transfer? So here these two people mm-hmm. had this information, and the one girl had left to go work someplace else. They never even changed the username and password for the stuff. Yeah. So, you know, stuff like that happens all the time. And it's just, it's only a matter of time before it comes back to bite them in the butt.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it's a matter of time. I think it's very much, but it is very much Russian roulette. I mean, there are times where, there are times where, like, that was a perfect example. You know, CEO and the CFO are out, you know, having martinis on the golf course, doing a, you know, round of nine holes, and we need to transfer this funds over to, you know, our private Cayman Islands offshore holding account, like, yesterday, and we need to do this. So, okay, we'll just do it this one time. And it's always, you know, oh, it's that one time. It's not a question of, you know, if the person's trustworthy, you're fine, but how do you know
right.
that? And that comes back to what you're talking about with background checks. You know, is that person have a felony conviction for wire fraud? Okay, that's a person you really don't want to be giving that password
right.
to.
Right.
With that Cayman Islands offshore holding fund,
yeah.
you're really not fine.
Right,
then
exactly.
You just want to get rid of that
exactly.
money.
Exactly. $50 million might be a little bit too much of a draw for them.
Tempting
yeah,
target for
exactly.
them.
Exactly, a temptation for them to resist. Yeah, isn't it amazing?
You know, you give them 50 and you get a receipt back for 5. Oh, where'd this 45 go? Oh, I don't know.
Isn't that amazing how you just...
Hold on, I got to go to my Lexus dealership.
...wire money into an account, you know, from halfway around the world. And oh, it's just, it's amazing these days, the stuff you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm actually, I've never actually done that, but it always seems very interesting, the fact that I can go and say, all right, let me go. You know, it's always cool when you hear, okay, well, you just wired that over to the bank in Hong Kong. I was like, whoa, okay, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it takes like 3 seconds, and you get a confirmation number. I was like, okay, everything okay? Yeah, everything's okay. Was that the right amount? Yeah, it was the right amount, because it's very hard to undo once you do it. Very difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I think it was it in England? I don't know where it was, but maybe it had to be stateside, because I don't think this was happening in England. But this person went to, he like was selling his house or something, and he got like the check from the mortgage company, and it was in his checking account or something, and he went to Burger King and bought a sandwich. And the person accidentally typed in instead of like – it was like he like added like a couple extra zeros toward the end and ended up wiping out most of his checking account. And he didn't double-check the number.
Ooh, ouch.
And the problem with it was like they were going to close the next day, and it was a complete mistake, and they understood it. So they were trying to refund everything, but the bank wouldn't let them refund it for 24 hours.
Ouch.
For something else, I was like, oh, that's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it does have its good things and advantages and disadvantages, that's for sure.
Which is why I keep all of my money in my mattress.
Let's see here. Go back to my notes real quick. Some other things on how to fight. Be aware, you know, be aware of what's going on in your company. You know, if you're going to have a product, for example, have you seen these Heelys these kids are wearing these days? Can you imagine if you would have
Can
you imagine if you would have released that product 6 months before your competitor? I mean, it's just absolutely amazing how every kid I see now between the ages of 6 and 16 are wearing shoes with wheels on them. It's amazing.
Drives me nuts. And what really drives me batty is when I get going to I guess I'm really starting to become old when I think about this. When I see, like, the no wheelies allowed in the store, I'm like, yeah, damn straight, you young whippersnappers. Get those damn wheelies out of my store. Get the fuck off my lawn.
These are pretty expensive, too. They range.
That's crazy. You see these kids just zipping right by you with, like, out their legs moving. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Get away.
Well, it looks like they range anywhere from $95 to $58 a pair. So, and you know they're probably selling 10,000 pairs a day for Pete's sake.
Oh, totally. I'm curious if crap like this gets caught on any other place except the United States. I wonder if this is like a problem in France.
Well, you know,
they're just us American schmucks.
Yeah, it's just general marketing, because if they were really smart, they would just make them ridiculously expensive. Then all the cool kids would get them, and then all the other kids would want them. Then if you drop the price down like half, then everyone else would buy them. You know, you start at the boutique stores. And then
you have to name yourself Nike.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. You start at the boutique stores, and then you saturate Walmart. Isn't that what pretty much everyone does?
I think so.
Good marketing strategy.
Yeah, that's how everyone does it. All right, so be aware. Be aware of what?
Be aware of what your employees are doing. You know, watch their network usage. You know, let them know, hey, listen, you know, there's competition and competitive intelligence. Our information is our company. You know, make sure you keep your laptops locked up. Make sure you have hard drive encryption. You know, make sure you have good security policies in place. All those good security things that you should be doing. You know, your employees need to know about social engineering, you know, when people call up on the phone, that the information that they get, you know, people just, they have no idea what things are worth. Like, for example, a corporate email list. It's worth a fortune these days. It's just, it's worth so much money, it's ridiculous. For, you know, people that sell health insurance, if you have a corporate email list, it's pretty much a license to print money. Because you can sell it to spammers from one side of the world to the other. Even just a valid email address is worth money these days. So your employees should...
Yeah, those...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
your employees should be aware that the information that they have is worth money, and that there are people out there that are looking to trip them up and gather that information. And it can happen to anybody. Look at Valve.
So, I mean, we're talking about, like, monitoring everything and, you know, basically keeping everything under draconian measures. I mean, where's the line drawn between, I'm sure all the hackers are going crazy now that we were talking about this before, but where's the line drawn between, you know, the rights of the individual over the rights of the company? I mean, I want to go and visit, you know, Yahoo, my Yahoo email account from work, which technically I don't do, but
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I tend to side with the corporation in the aspect of, if you're at work, that a bandwidth is paid for by your company, the computer is paid for by your company, you don't have any privacy at work. Most corporations are pretty much like that, even if they haven't told you they're monitoring your net usage by now anyways. And if they're not, they probably should be. You know, you really have to these days, because people are such freaks. If you don't monitor them, they're going to start setting up their own web servers, and they'll sit there all day, you know, looking at porn or whatnot.
But porn's a valid stress release device.
But the internet was better.
You're infringing on my rights, man. It's my right to watch goat porn work.
Yeah, we get about 3 or 4 people a year we just have to kind of, you know, let go because they just can't stay off the porn pages. So,
God, how can you even do that at work?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. You'd be very surprised.
I don't know, John. This is the fifth what's the color? Cyan cartridge we've gone through this thing. Looks like someone's printing a long thing with a lot of pink on it. Jeez, Clem, I don't know. Just pop another one in.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you do that? It's just, I mean, perhaps, I guess, if you don't, I mean, because the problem with me, and what always drives me nuts, actually, is the fact that my cube that I have is open in the back, and everyone can look at what I'm doing, which really pisses me off, but we won't get into that. But, you know, surfing porn, if I accidentally click on something, like, where did I go once? Back in 2000 or so, I went to, like, some website, and it was a domain squatter for porn, and I was like, ah, crap, because I knew that everyone could see behind me.
Right.
I'm like, I'm not going to that website.
Yeah.
I couldn't even picture actually going to one.
Yeah, take a cue from the guys on, what's that TV show that was on, G3. Take a cue from the guys at G3. Never, ever, ever, ever open up a web page when you're either A, giving a presentation, or B, being filmed in a room with a bunch of other people. Because, you know,
that's just
you're obvious. Always going to type in Google wrong, or, you know, fat finger a URL, and 9 times out of 10 it's going to pull up a porn site. It's happened to me. It's extremely embarrassing.
Noob. Anyway.
That's the nature of the beast.
Why go to websites when screenshots will suffice nicely? that's my philosophy. If I can get a screenshot in there rather than actually going to a web page, I am not even going to chance it. Because I know what the screenshot will be. Unless someone's hexed my presentation.
So let's see, I'm trying to think of a good way to wrap this whole thing up. Ooh, hire hackers. Security professionals.
Yeah.
I make a distinction between security professionals and hackers just because it always seems like when I go to things like HOPE or DEF CON or ShmooCon, any of those, you know, get-togethers, there's two groups of people. There's security professionals who are hired for whatever reason to do security services, and the guys that do it because it's fun. And they live it, and they eat it, and they breathe it, and it's all they do day and night. They're security, security, security. They love just breaking stuff and fixing it and finding out ways to make it secure. And those people usually don't have, like, master's degrees or PhDs. And, you know, a lot of corporations, when they hire people to work in their organizations, I hate to say it, but they do put a precedence on education. And, you know, most corporations mm-hmm. want you to have a degree before they'll hire you.
Yep.
Things are starting to change a little bit. If you notice, if you just go to Dice and type in security, you'll notice a lot of the jobs say that they want a bachelor's degree or equivalent experience. The majority of them mm-hmm. do say that because they know that, hey, if the guy's been out working his fingers to the bone and getting certs and stuff, maybe he doesn't have a degree, and that's just fine with us because we just really want him to help us make our organization secure.
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, hire hackers.
Well, I mean, it's what it is, and I mean, we're always talking about going out with, you know, degrees and everything. But for some people, I think you mentioned before the show started taping, you yourself included, correct?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, some people don't have college degrees, and I know we always kind of harp on education here, and education is good, and education is good, and certifications sometimes are bad, but. It all depends on what the person is and who you are. Education, I think college was explained to me very aptly my senior year in college. Of course, they always tell you this after you've paid all the money, but college really isn't the degree really doesn't do anything. It just opens doors for you.
Right.
And when I look at it, that's the best explanation that I've ever heard about college. It's basically it shows to someone that you can buckle down for 4 years and get a little piece of paper that says I have a degree in computer science.
Right.
I mean, it's not as much knowledge that you have. It's just the fact that you did it.
Well,
so.
Just recently, they just have an InfoSec master's degree. I mean, the NSA will pay for your college. They are looking for people to give scholarships to right now. They need to get as many InfoSec people as possible because it's a huge and growing field. And not only that, but there's a lot of people retiring. A lot of people that have been in those positions for 20 years are retiring, and they need to fill them up with fresh people with fresh skills.
Can I listen to other people's phone calls?
Absolutely. If you, the big story is a few years ago, there was a story, it was just like a little blurb, about how you could take a Nokia cell phone and flash it with a firmware to allow you to eavesdrop on it. Well, now this is coming up again. A couple weeks ago on Slash Gear, there was a story about how the FBI has made that mandatory on every cell phone released in the United States. They can go into it remotely and turn a microphone on even when it's turned off.
Well, was that mandatory or was that just sort of a thing that happened? I think the over the air programming has been around for a while. I mean, I believe what you were talking about before wasn't Nokia, it was the Oki, which I'm not exactly sure if that's related to Nokia at all. But that was something where you had to hook it up to your computer and reflash it. But now a cell phone's gotten more fancy schmancy, and you can do all kind of, it has all the bells and whistles on it. One of the things you could do was over the air programming, and like with my Sidekick, I don't think I've ever seen my MDA do it, but I've only had it for a while. It would come out and say, oh, you know, we've released a software upgrade. Do you want to download it and install it on your phone? And I'm sure there's a way of actually doing that without the prompt on it, and I believe that's what the feds did for that certain case.
Wow.
And yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure, I don't think the feds have made it mandatory. I think the only thing they really made mandatory was the E911 stuff and the GPS. But that's another story for another time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, something to think about. You know, maybe you might, next time you buy a cell phone, you might want to import one and make sure it's unlocked.
And get prepaid SIMs.
Absolutely.
That are paid with cash.
Well, those are cheap. I was surprised at how cheap they are. Prepaid SIMs are the way to go.
I really can't wait till this market actually breaks over in the United States. I mean, you're really starting to see the beginnings of it on eBay and everything. But, like, you go over to Europe, and there's basically just aisles and aisles of SIMs from various carriers. I'm like, wow, this is so cool.
Yep, absolutely.
And you just plug it in your phone, and you have a new phone number. I'm like, yes, I want a phone number from Liechtenstein.
Yeah, it is pretty nice.
Yeah.
Well, corporate espionage is becoming so popular that they even have their own society. and it's at www.scip.org, and it's the Society of Competitive Intelligence Professionals. It's
So are these the people who are defending against corporate spies, or are the corporate spies themselves?
They label themselves as a global nonprofit membership organization for everyone involved in creating and managing business knowledge, whatever that means. Actually, I think they refer to them as kites. And what a kite is the flyer will set the kite out, and then if there's any trouble or the kite gets caught or anything, he could just cut the string and let the kite go on about its way, and it can't be traced back. It's unlike what HP did, where they had the quote-unquote private investigators, you know, do all the pretexting.
Mm-hmm.
But they did hire him. You know, if they would have been smart about it, they could have probably have gotten away with that. The problem is that they didn't realize that a few of those people were very tech-savvy and they fought back hard.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
If you haven't heard of the HP, as we referred to it, debacle, go read up. It made news. How long ago was this? This was in 2006. It was about six months ago, right? Six, 9 months ago. And it's just fun to see how everything played out. And if you want to buy something, want to actually buy something, go to Amazon and pick up, what's the book called? Hacking the Network 1, which was the first one that came out. So how to own the box. And I believe there are there's a couple of stories out there where it's, it's a perfect example of it. I've one of the stories, if you haven't read this book, read this book. It's a real fun book. It's essentially it's hacker fiction, and it's very well versed and based in reality, and it's a lot of what if scenarios. And one of them is a guy hired by a company to break into another company and basically steal the source code for this their brand new application that hasn't launched yet. And exactly. That's what it was. And it's fun, and it details how it went about, and demonstrates a lot of tools you can use and how something like this could happen in real life, and it's just a fun read. I think I picked it up, probably like 2003. So wow, it's 3 years now. Wow, that's kind of creepy. And I think I read it within like 2 or 3 days. It was just I couldn't put it down. It was great stuff.
Geek Mafia is also another kind of fiction hacking book that's pretty good. I love all of them.
Oh, wasn't that? Yeah, that I remember hearing about that on Off the Hook. I never actually read
it,
though.
It was pretty good. It's cheap. You can get it off Amazon for a couple bucks. I think you can get it for about $5. But it's definitely worth a good read if you're into that kind of stuff. Oh, wait. It's only a buck.
Pick it up for $1.
But, yeah, how to own the network.
Well, no, it's how to own the box, I believe. Hold on. I think I can. Stealing the Network, How to Own the Box. Yes, it's on my bookshelf right now. And Stealing Network, How to Own the Continent is the second one, and I believe there's a third one. And a fourth one, I believe, is coming out real soon now, if I remember correctly. Yeah, I don't know what the fourth one is. But I have that on good information.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, anything else?
No, that's about it. Yeah, get into security. We need all the security help we can get. It's a very, very growing field. As I was explaining to you before we started the show, there's a lot of people that are in security, as in IT also, that, you know, they're really not into their job. They just kind of went that way for as a career decision. I don't know about you guys, but I am like a true geek at heart. I can't stop fiddling with stuff. I'm always building servers and tearing them down and doing installs and playing around with different things, and it seems like the majority.
Please, you're talking to the guy who built up a malware analysis station. Come on now. Because I got bored. I have a spare computer. Let's go build
like
this.
The majority of the people that are in the field really aren't, you know, they're not like that. They graduated from college and they put security on their resume and got a job. So,
Mm-hmm. Well, that... Well, that's what it came down to. I mean, when I was in college, there were two groups of people. There were the people there who enjoyed it, and then there was people here because, oh, I heard IT
right,
paid a
exactly.
lot.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And why would I ever use a command line when I can double-click on all these pretty icons on the desktop?
Well, I got to admit, there were a couple people who were there because, you know, they heard IT was a good career move, and they were relatively, you know, well-versed in everything, and they knew what they were talking about. So, I mean, but there were, of course, there were people that were just like, oh, you know, I want to get a good job and pay a lot of money and not do any work and play on the
yeah.
computer all day.
Well, the problem with IT in general is outsourcing. The good thing about security is companies
mm-hmm.
will never outsource security because they're too paranoid, you know, and as well they should be. Why should you send all your corporate security functions to India or Pakistan or South Africa or, you know, any place, Europe, to outsource them? When you can't secure it, you know, they.
Mm-hmm.
I think they figured that out when they started outsourcing all these call centers to India with these databases. They said, you know what, we don't have any control over this information once it goes to Bangalore. It's gone.
Well, wasn't there a company who outsourced, it was like a medical transcription service who outsourced their stuff to India, and they all of a sudden had a contract dispute with them? After they sent all their data there, and it was all these medical records and all these Social Security numbers, and they're like, oh, fine, we're keeping this
right.
now. Yeah, pay us some
yeah,
more money.
Absolutely.
And I think they had to fork it over because they were screwed.
How much database information can you get on a 320-gig hard drive, you know?
Exactly.
Millions and millions.
Or hell, how much database can you get on, like, a CD? It's just amazing how
yeah.
much stuff can fit on there.
Yeah, SQL is definitely very portable.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much all I got, yeah.
All right. Yeah, well, it was a cool enough episode. I think we kind of ventured from corporate espionage a couple of times, but there was some good stuff in there. I mean, InfoSec's just a fascinating career, not career, but you can tell where my mind is, an interesting field in so many ways, and just is. It's such a varied, I mean, we got like malware, and that's InfoSec, and then we can get corporate espionage, and then we can talk about forensics, and it's just, there's so many subclassifications of it where we can just basically probably do it for another half a year and not cover all the little tidbits and nooks and crannies
right.
of it, but
right.
it was definitely an interesting episode. Let's see, we actually have an announcement this week that I think Booter still wanted me to announce that he's still doing the Jenny scan, and I think you can contact him on either IRC or the forum, so just send him a PM or something. And forums are still messed up, so we're still working on that, I believe. I believe Stank Dog is currently. Yeah, I haven't noticed him down, have you? But apparently people have been still saying stuff about it, and Stank Dog, as we're recording this, is visibly pouring over the server right now.
Sporadic, but nothing really noticeable.
No, I haven't really noticed anything. Shouts. I'll send shouts out again to Iridium and all of our service people. So thanks a lot, guys.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
And I'll also send shouts out to Stank Dog and Fixing the Server and Booter for doing Jenny Scan and all the people who sent me presents. But they don't listen to this radio show, so
presents.
It doesn't really matter. Yeah, I got presents. It's Christmas. Good stuff. Send shout out to my mom and my dad. Yeah, and my wife. Kicking it old school. And Santa.
And all of
those. Yeah. I'm just going to ask you this randomly. Did you actually check out the Google Earth Santa tracking service?
No, I did not. You know which one I checked out is the one from NORAD. I actually went to the NORAD website and watched them track Santa. It was really cool.
Yeah, I gotta say, compared to Google Earth, the NORAD one is totally lame, or at least the one that I saw from last year. I didn't check them out this year, but I loaded up Google Earth, and I was showing it to like two or three people, and they were like, they're all like my age, mid-20s, and they're like, oh my god, that is so cool, because you have like this little icon of like Santa going across, and I think we checked him out around like 11 a.m., and he was somewhere in the South Pacific,
wow.
and I was like, go Santa.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Who do you have any shouts?
I'm all set, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, so all right, no problem. Our site of the week, and as Paladin brought up earlier, it's sandbox.norman.no, which is a fun site. You should check it out. Email, always, radio@finrev.com. Send us an email, especially if you're in the service, because I'm quite interested in talking to you for no other reason than my own curiosity. Closing music is from Sonic the Hedgehog 3. It's called Walk on Water, and it's by House the Gate, available on ocremix.org. And, as always, we will see you next week. Same hack time.